I was thinking about when we had a solar eclipse not long ago, and a bunch of us gathered on the lawn out here, and we had some ritual and some connection time, and then we had the joy of watching the solar eclipse, and you had to have the special glasses, and so somebody really ingenious brought a welding mask with a glasses built in and passed it around, and we were just having so much fun and in awe together. You know, that's the beauty of the sort of wonder of nature that brings us into that power of who we are, in essence, the power of the divine. I was also remembering a time when Brenly and I were at Lake Powell, and we pulled up kind of late, and we couldn't get a camping spot. So we decided to just blow up our air mattress and put it out in the field, and we'd never done that before. And lo and behold, little did we know, it was like one of the most brilliant meteor showers that was happening that night. And so we were laying there looking at the sky, and neither of us slept a wink, because one of us would start to drift off, and the other one would say, look, 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 look. And then we'd be, oh, wow, you know. So the whole night was filled with wonder and awe, and then to wake up with the sun coming up over the weeds and the beautiful lake there and the red rocks. I mean, it was just so magical. And I know that you too have had those kind of magical times of stargazing or watching the moon rise or the sunrise or the sunset, have you not? And in those times, there's that sense of just an overwhelm with the wonder and the awe and the beauty of which this place is made, including us. It's a reflection of the majesty of what we are. So today we're beginning a new series called Resurrecting the Cosmic Christ. And we're going to be resurrecting the cosmic Christ all the way through Easter and onto Earth Day the following Sunday in all different aspects. And today we're going to take a little trip out into outer space, which really is a trip into inner space because it's one and the same, essentially. You know, there's all these stories about how we begin, the very beginnings of life, the beginnings of the universe. The universe, they say, scientists say, started 20 billion years ago, Earth about 4.5 billion, and then humans as we know ourselves now, there's different versions, but humans as we know ourselves now about 200,000 years ago. So you can see the little blip that we are in the larger universe. Yet we're not just looking at the little blip that we are today, but actually the magnificence and the majesty that we are as divine beings. And in all these origin stories, it's fun to just visit them. You know, there's up in the Northwest, I learned about a story about that we emerged from a clam shell. And it's actually beautiful art in this museum that has the people climbing out of the clam shell. You know, and then there's the stories about, well, of course, the Christian or the Hebrew scriptures, really, that are also the Christian story of Genesis, where, you know, over the face of the waters of the deep came wisdom, right? This divine intelligence. And then that initiation we often call either the Big Bang, or now they call it the flaring forth, or the fireball. There's all different words for it that you can choose your own. But that beginning of whatever it is it created. There are some indigenous stories that say that we began from a beaver. And there are some that say, you know, and in the universe story, which is a book by Thomas Berry and Brian Swim, it says, you know, it's important to know how your story goes. You know, what emerges first? Is it a woman? Is it a man? Is it a wolf? Because that will radiate out into the truth of how you sort of live your own cosmology. So what is your story? Have you thought about that? What is your origin story? Make up your own origin story out of the visioning and imagination within you to see how is it that you came to be into this world. Maybe it was stardust. Maybe it was the dust of the earth, as we learned in the Hebrew scriptures. So the stardust story is an interesting one, isn't it? You know, we say that, we have said before that we are made of stardust, but what does that really mean? Are we really made of stardust? You know, or is that just sort of a spiritual imagination of the essence of light that we are made of? Well, it turns out scientists are showing us that we actually are quite related to the stars. So there's a scientific study that was published in Science and Astronomy it was published in January of 2017. And the researchers found that they did a star survey. I'm not really sure how you go about doing a star survey. That's pretty fascinating in and of itself. I'm pretty sure like Survey Monkey or something like that doesn't do it for you. Or a little paper survey, probably not that either. But whatever it is, however the scientists do this survey of the stars, what they found was that 97% of the same kind of atoms and elements that are in the human body are in the stars of our galaxy. And the closer you get to the center of the galaxy, the more they tend to match up. They call these elements the building blocks of life. Isn't that cool to think we really are made of stardust, the galaxy? And I love that the closer you get to the center, because you know the closer you get to the center is always the closer you get to the essence, just like within us. The closer we get to the center, the closer we get to that divine essence, that Christ nature. So this stardust concept is something that is actually gaining more and more traction. More of the those who are working in the scientific fields of astronomy are looking to the indigenous stories, not as quaint stories, but as something that has some elements of truth in them, like the seven sisters of the Cree. Tell the story of the seven sisters, and that's one of the stories of a galaxy that that scientists are beginning to pay more attention to. So it's fascinating stuff, isn't it, to go full circle in these many ways of these origin stories and to contemplate for a moment from which what have we come and from where have we come, and when we are stargazing, are we beholding a mirror of the essence of ourselves? Now, I don't know about you, but when I think of these kinds of things, I feel expanded. I feel expansive. Like my mind begins to expand. My body begins to expand. It's like a sense of, wow, big stuff, inspirational stuff. I don't feel that constriction of everyday life, of the mechanistic kind of style of everyday life, right? So that's where we're really moving into is this spaciousness, and hence the word cosmic in Cosmic Christ. We're talking about the cosmos, not just Jesus, the man who embodied the Christ spirit, but way before that. Remember, Jesus said before Abraham, did I just lose sound? No, I guess not. For a moment, but we're back. We've recreated. We've evolved. We're in it together, that supernova experience of coming together and blowing apart and coming together and blowing apart like the breath, like the heartbeat. You know, it's like there's a microcosm here within us of that macrocosm. And when we begin to contemplate that, to meditate upon that macrocosm, things begin to expand into the ethers, into space, into greater possibility, into the potentiality that we've come to be. So Charles Fillmore, one of our co-founders, talked about, he loved science, and so did Myrtle, and they would weave science and spirituality together of their time in a lot of their writings. And we too, I think, in Unity, still kind of have this sense of respect for science and spirituality and how they come together and how they inform one another. How spirit, you know, sort of is like when we say we're stardust from a spiritual standpoint, and we cast that out, as Charles Fillmore said, we cast out in faith, and then science sort of catches up. And then when science catches up, we go, wow, yeah, it's really true that we're getting some of this scientific proof, and then we cast further. And so that's also that expanding process that we go through in order to begin to recognize the potential and the fullness and the truth of who we are and the source from which we've come. So Charles Fillmore talks about, he says, the greatest discovery of physical science is that all things apparently have come out of this invisible, intangible ether. That all things emerge from this creation point, this divine intelligence. And he talks about how when Jesus talks so much about heaven, he wasn't talking about some faraway place, but he actually, the translation, the Greek that came to us through the New Testament or what's now called the Christian scriptures, actually was meant to be heavens, not heaven. And so he actually was talking about galaxies and space and the heavens and that kind of spaciousness that comes along with that. So Fillmore says he taught about its dynamic, its intelligent character, and said that it's that entity that rules within humankind. That's what he meant when he said the kingdom of God is within you, or the kingdom of the heavens is within you. So what does it do for us to know that, to begin to recognize that when we stand in awe or in wonder, we are standing in awe or in wonder of something that we are not separated from, but we are a part of, that we are fully connected to. Like when you look at the starry sky and you see the Milky Way, I think it's like glue. It reminds me of glue that binds all life together, that connects us all. So in space, and spaciousness is really the work of beginning to recognize ourselves as this cosmic Christ. So moving into a spacious kind of awareness. I know when I was a young woman, sometimes my friends would call me spacey. And it always kind of hurt my feelings, you know, because who wants to be called spacey? It's not usually considered a real compliment, right? But I didn't really have the spiritual understanding to get that part of that for me was like a kind of a craving for spaciousness, a kind of a craving, you know, that sort of daydreaming sort of space was a craving to enter more into the spiritual realm. All I had learned about was the religious realm. So I didn't really know how to access that or know much about that. Since then, I've learned a lot about how you can use mindfulness to focus and, you know, bring that in when you need focus when you're feeling spacey. But also to let yourself go into those spaces, because those spaces are like these, you know, space anomalies that they call that kind of portal between the galaxy or the star formation of the seven sisters. You know, it's like these sort of spacious portals or kind of places that we enter. And when we enter those, we are entering those places of understanding, or beginning to brush at least a little bit of understanding with this idea of ourselves and the cosmic Christ and how it's all connected and how we are connected to it. And so it is that those galaxies are within us as well. If we practice space in a way, we can begin to like intentionally have spacious practices. Spacious practices look like things when we kind of leave time behind and we go into wide open space. So I don't know, when's the last time that you went somewhere without a phone or a timepiece? Or you didn't check it anyway while you entered into a place where, like what we sometimes would say, it's like time stood still. When we say time stood still, what we mean is I entered space. Because we're no longer aware of that left-brained idea of chronos time, of calendars and clocks and cell phones and devices. We've left that behind and we've entered spiritual space. And when we enter spiritual space, we generally enter the flow of creativity. The language of spirit is more about art than it is about words. It's more about nature. And so when we're in places of nature or flowing art or movement, because movement then opens up the space within the body, right? So that's why things like Tai Chi and Qigong and yoga are considered spiritual practices, because they attune us to the breath, the pranayama, that energy, that life force energy, and it opens us up. It opens up the cells of our bodies to space and that spaciousness of the galaxies and the cosmos. Next time you do a yoga stretch, think of that. See, it's like if we do allow ourselves to go there, to think that way, to get, if you will, a little spacey at times, it allows us then to move into the expansion of the creative Christ. And that's really what we're talking about here as we resurrect the cosmic Christ consciousness. As we resurrect the cosmic Christ, we remember again. And then we remember tools to remember again. And as we remember the tools, tools and the practices and we practice them, we experience that kind of spaciousness more and more and more, maybe even at all times. Matthew Fox, did you enjoy him last week? Oh, I felt so blessed that we were able to land him for a speaking date. I'd like to tell you every time I leave, Matthew Fox will speak, but you'll always have somebody great. I'll guarantee you that. But it was a real blessing to be able to have him here. And, you know, he's just somebody who just, he's got so much wisdom and so much intelligence, yet it's sort of like he's hanging stars. You know, he delivers it with a sort of ease and humor and grace. So I hope you enjoyed that. But anyway, getting back to the relevance of my talk and what I want to say about Matthew Fox is he says, without a healthy dose of space and mysticism, time becomes idolatry. Isn't that great? So that idolatry shows up for us in the collective consciousness as an idolatry of progress. You know, so that it's constant progress, right? Or even as an individual, it can be progress or what we might call productivity. I had a productive day. I got things done on my to-do list, you know? And that's all great and fine, but if that's like the heavy balance of what we are doing all the time, we're not getting enough spaciousness. We're not getting enough mysticism. And so it's to tip those scales so that we can move into those spaces. That's when we can really know ourselves and remember ourselves as one with this cosmic Christ consciousness. So he says also that it can be a kind of time idolatry, like a guilt kind of thing, like the apocalyptic shouting, you know, the world is ending, we're not going to exist anymore, you know, and it can become that sort of prophetic insistency or urgency. Or for us as an individual, it can be that kind of guilt of like, I didn't get enough done, you know, that's sort of that not enough idea. But it's, you know, it's out of our prosperity, out of our abundance, out of our expansion of knowing that time is just a relative tool. And so if you can take yourself on a space date this week, I really encourage you to do that and leave your timepieces behind. You know, if you really must know what time it is, you actually can estimate it pretty well with your fists and the sun. Did you know that? Yeah, so just look at the horizon. Be careful if you're on a mountain because things get really thrown off from personal experience. But if you can find a horizon place, and a fist is about an hour, so wherever the sun is, you can just do your fists until you see, oh yeah, it's about 3:00. It's amazing. And then I do this for half an hour and this for 15 minutes, and usually it's pretty right on. So if you have to know the time, but I'd rather you just take it all away and just have yourself a time and space, you know? And whatever that is for you, you know, for me, it's being outdoors. That's where I really feel alive. That's where I really feel expanded. But for you, maybe it's, you know, losing yourself in music and creating music or art or something that you haven't done in a while. I'd encourage you to stay away from words, even though words can be very creative. It's very left brain, and we're really versed in words. So get into the language of spirit that is more symbolic. Maybe meditate on a symbol or make a symbol and fashion it out of some natural, you know, metal or shells or whatever it is that makes you feel that sense of aliveness and connection. Make a starry sky. There's the movement that is both expansive and focused, you know, and there's meditation practice that is both expansive and focused. Many of us have probably learned meditation practices that are about focus, because it's to try to focus the mind, right? So we focus on breath. Let's say maybe if you're familiar with insight meditation or Vipassana from the Buddhist tradition. So breath is the first tool, and then over time you begin to add a few more tools. Try not to do too many things at once, but you notice now a thought, and you might label it thinking. Or a feeling arising, and you might label it feeling, or anger, or sadness, or whatever it is that comes up for you, joy. And so that's one form of meditation. Or maybe you were taught transcendental meditation, where there's a focus on a mantra that you repeat over and over again to focus your mind. Now, Charles Fillmore had steps of prayer, and it included things like contemplation and meditation that were focusing, and then the silence was more the spacious space. And more like kind of the diving into just the infinite silence, the infinite space. And I had a Kundalini yoga teacher once that said the more feminine style of meditation is the expanded kind of meditation rather than the focused kind. And I started to play with that a little bit, and the visual that works for me is sort of like I become like a sieve. So it's like open holes, you know, and it's like everything around me is moving. It's like I'm being breathed instead of I'm breathing. So God is breathing me. And so then I become one with everything around me. And it's this kind of, you can do it as an open-eyed meditation. In fact, if I'm at the ocean, I always want to do an expanded meditation. And I start to close my eyes because I'm practiced more in the focus kind. And every time my eyes just pop open because I can't stand not to look at the ocean, you know, and the beauty because that's part of it. And so an expanded meditation is sensory as well. So we open our senses and we allow our senses to also be part of the meditation. So we can hear whatever we can hear around us and we can see whatever we can see around us, yet we're still in a meditative state and we become a part of everything around us. So it brings us into that state of oneness. Now, interestingly, the focused way also brings us to those places, right? If we're focused in our meditation, we drop into that place that then opens up into the cosmos. So either way, you get to space. Either way, you go into the galaxies of the cosmic Christ. So whichever way works for you, or play with both, you can experience that spaciousness that you are and that you have come from. So in movement, as I mentioned, is another. You know, there's this macrocosm that's happening and this microcosm that's happening, and we're in the dance all the time with both. I saw this movie once that I've watched several times, only 9 minutes long, and it's on YouTube. It's called The Power of Ten. And in the movie, what happens is there's this couple on a picnic in Chicago on the lawn by McCormick Place. Looking at John because he and I are from Chicago, and I know he knows where I'm talking about. And the man takes a nap. And so the scientists, they're scientists that film this, and so they look at a freckle on his skin, and they start there, and they say, the man is taking a nap. You know, it's like, it's more recent, but it sort of has that 50s-style narration. The man is taking a nap on McCormick Place, and, you know, we're going to go out, power of 10. And so they go out, the power of 10, and they keep going out, the power of 10, with this visual. And pretty soon, you can see Earth. You know, it's like first you see the park, and then pretty soon you're seeing, you know, the United States, and then you can see all of the Earth, and then you're out into space. And then he keeps going, you know, the speed of light, like in 1 minute's time, we're beyond our galaxy and into another galaxy, and you can see the stars opening up and coming together and the light everywhere present. And then he begins to, at some point, we're out so far into the galaxy, he reverses it. And it goes, the power of 10, the power of 10, the power of 10, and we're back pretty soon. Before you know it, we're back at the park, and we're at the man's skin, and we're back at the freckle. And then he goes in. And so it goes into the skin, and into the cells in the skin, and into the body, and into the organs, and into the protons, and the neutrons, and everything's moving. And guess what? It looks like a galaxy of stars in there. It's really cool. And so it's like, that is us, right? As above, so below. And it's so easy for us to forget, isn't it? It's so easy for us to think, this is it, the sort of physical existence that we've been told about, the sort of to-dos that we have to take care of the body and the car and the house and each other, is like, you know, we get sort of myopic. And so I guess that's what this talk is all about, is to say, let's blow that open. You know, let's take the mind-blowing ideas of science and the stories of our origins and weave that into our everyday life so that we can have those experiences of awe and wonder and remembering who we are. Because when we do, then we operate from that high level of potential. So as I said, Jesus was not like the first Christ. The Christ is a principle. It's a universal knowing. It's a thing that existed before time. But then the Word was made flesh, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, we're told in John, the first chapter of John. And the bishop who wrote the Stations of the Cosmic Christ with Matthew Fox said it a little bit differently. He said, in the beginning was Logos, the dynamic creative pattern of love. And so in the beginning was this creative pattern of love. So then the Word became flesh is when, you know, Jesus embodied this idea of the Christ. He showed us what it looks like and said, you will do these things and greater things will you do. The kingdom of heaven is within you. And so that idea that we have it in us and all around us is really what continues to then draw it forth for us, that every breath is an expanding opportunity to know who we are and to come to that center of the galaxy within us, that place that remembers that, oh yeah, I'm made of stardust. I'm made of divinity. I'm made of infinite power and infinite intelligence and infinite love. Knowing that does something for us, doesn't it? When we walk about the earth, then we can see the divine in each other, like treat each other like a star. You know, not the glossy people in the glossy magazines, as Eckhart Tolle would say, not that kind of star. But boy, if we gave each other the kind of reverence that we give the Hollywood stars, it would be something like divinity, wouldn't it? It'd be something like treating each other like we're seeing the essence of the divine within one another. And so that would be the truth, and it is the truth of who we are, of seeing one another that way. You know, the drawback, I think, or the pitfall, let's say the pitfall that we can get into when we're working with space is the idea of escapism. So there's sort of a fine line, right, between that spacey daydreaming space that just sort of distracts, or that spacey daydreaming space that takes us into awe and wonder and possibility and potential. So of course I'm talking about the latter. But the first one, we can even get caught in pitfalls in our spirituality around escapism. I remember once sitting in a circle with Panache Desai. Anybody know that spiritual teacher? Yeah, some of you know him. It just so happened in my last church, there were only 16 of us in this circle, and he was sitting right across from me. And I was expressing this frustration, and he was just giving me perfect empathy, you know? You know, when somebody can really get in there with you, and he was like really in there with me. And I was expressing this like, you know, when you have a glimpse of the bigness of our spirit, and then you have to hit the hard reality that's like crammed into this little space, you know? And it's like, I just have a hard time accepting the embodiment of this enormous spirit that like wants to be out and free, you know, and not limited by time and by the density of the physicality. And so he was right there with me, yeah, and it's like, feels so confined and it feels so tight and you just want to let it all out. And I was like, yeah, I just want to let it all out. But you know, that can lead to this idea that I kind of disconnect or disassociate with the life here. But that's not what Jesus was here to do. He was embodied spirituality. He came with a body on purpose to say, look, this thing is amazing. This magnificent body temple can hold galaxies. This amazing body temple can heal on a dime. This amazing body temple can think up and can evolve and co-create with our Creator. And let me show you how it works. And around he went, raising people from the dead and, you know, healing all kinds of things and teaching these things. And somehow we haven't quite harnessed all of that, but we're still working on it. We're still resurrecting this idea of the cosmic Christ that we are, the cosmic Christ from which we have come. So he is before all things, this Christ. In Colossians, it says in 1:17, and in him all things are held together. So it is this idea of the Christ that it's the love then we come back to, right? When we think of space, you might think of cold and principle and expansive, but there's love there too, right? There's light. There's a binding together. In that cosmic Christ, there is that principle of love that undergirds everything. You know, that's why when we look at the eclipse together on the lawn, that we feel a sense of connection, because there's that sense of love that binds us together in the wonder of what we are. And so there's a sense of romance, right? We always talk about romance when we talk about sunsets and sunrises and moonrises and starry skies and walks along the beaches and, you know, all of that that we talk about, we think of romantic, right? Why is it romantic? Because it brings forth the very best essence of who we are. We know ourselves to be this divine light and this divine love, and we see it in the other. And so together we are in that sense of awe of all of it, of the source energy, of the galaxies of possibilities that are in us and that are around us and that we are beholding in the beauty and the light that we see. One time, Grace, our goddaughter, who's at the time was 3, we were at Sedgwick Reserve where Brendley and I lived before this. And it was a 6,000 acres. It was a place where scientists came to study. And we also gathered to do a lot of nature-type events together. And there was, a lunar eclipse it was that night, and a red moon, something really cool. And so all of us, the people that were a part of that community, were out, and we had a potluck, and we were just, at one point, Brendley and Grace were sitting on a blanket together in front of me. And Grace always had they've always had this soul connection, and Grace always seemed to have like a little crush on Brendley when she was little, And so they're sitting there together, and I happened to be standing behind them, and it was cloudy that night, so we all had decided, well, we had a great party, but we weren't going to be able to see a show. And then about that time, the skies kind of cleared, and we saw this beautiful red moon. And Grace turns to Brendley and says, "You're my best baby ever." And I was like, huh? But isn't that what happens? And, for a 3-year-old, that's just pure love, right? That's pure truth coming out. It's like in that moment to behold something like that with somebody connects us. And that's the binding love of, that's the binding Christ. That's the Christ of the cosmic Christ. It's that what binds us together in love. And then it liberates us back into the galaxy from which we've come. And so within ourselves, we can experience all of this. In a moment of pausing and going within, we can open up to all this possibility. And then in communication and connection with each other, all the sweeter, right? All the more loving, all the more pure comes forth everything that we are. So I just want to encourage you to know that gravity loves you. You can go out into the galaxies and space and no worries, because whether the Earth was once believed to be flat or round, either way, we're never going to fall off, because Mother Earth will always bind us with her love. So even if we do feel like we've entered those spatial places and we feel like, oh my gosh, I've gone really far out here, we can always ground ourselves back to the earth, to this place that loves us, that holds us, that too, that binding Christ energy. So it's going to be fun, this series, as we resurrect the cosmic Christ. I'm not sure what kind of journey we're in for. It's a week-by-week kind of thing, but it sure is fun to enter into the possibilities and to move through this rich time of leading up into Easter, to Palm Sunday into Easter, and then we're going to celebrate Earth Day on the final day of the series. So it all feels connected. I'm not sure where it's going, but it's a fun ride. And so this week, I want to encourage you, take yourself on a space date. Leave your timepieces and your words behind and let yourself be. Let yourself just enter the cosmos of the Christ. So let's know this together, because in an instant we can awaken. In an instant, like the Big Bang, we can awaken to the I am that we are, the cosmic Christ that we are. So let's close out with this affirmation. Big Bang, I am one with a cosmic Christ. You are.